Okay, it is 6 o'clock, so I'd like to call the April 21st, 2025 meeting of the Claremont County Public Library Board of Trustees to order. May I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Doss?
I am here.
Mr. Ramos?
Here.
Ms. Wade?
Here.
Ms. Kosika?
Here.
Mr. Humphrey?
Here.
Ms. Bach?
Here.
Ms. Schluter?
Here.
Thank you. All right, let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. All right, I am looking for a motion to approve the March 17th, 2025 minutes as mailed with a couple of grammatical corrections, I believe. I think there were some.
We neglected to reflect Ms. Schluter, voting yes on the several motions, the last three, second, I'm sorry, the, not the very last one, but the three before the last one. You were neglected of saying yes, and we've added that back into the minutes. So apologies for that.
Do I have a motion?
With those corrections, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
All right. Mr. Humphrey makes a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Ms. Bach seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is public participation. I do not see any. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Moving on. BOT brief with Mr. Ramos.
So we've talked in the past about how the Public Library Board is a public entity that can be sued and can sue. And one of the things that, and there can be in egregious situations, there can be personal liability. So one of the things that we do on a regular basis when we have contracts, like Chris and I talked about last week, was make sure that the contracts are sent to the prosecutor's office. Okay. Now, that's my point for tonight is that the prosecutor's responsibility is to look at the and review the contracts and return them approved as to form. Now, that language can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but when that comes back from the prosecutor approved as to form, it gives us, not only as a board, but individually, a lot of protection in case of any litigation. Excuse me. Generally, the phrase signifies that a legal document has been reviewed and approved to be in proper form. It is an affirmation that counsel has read the document, embodies the party's agreement, and counsel perceives no impediments to his to the client signing it. Courts have looked at this and have expounded on it a little bit and saying that it has been interpreted to be a review of the legality of all the matters contained in the contract as it relates to the Constitution, statutes, and contract law of this state. So there are specific things that are precluded in the statutes and is determined by the courts. And so some of those things, well, all those things the prosecutor knows about, and so those things get reviewed in the contracts and the different documents that they review. But again, the prosecutor is approving it as to form, not as to the details of what we're trying to accomplish. In other words, if in the contract we say something is black and the statute says, okay, you can say it's black, prosecutor looks at it and says, okay, it's black. In fact, it's white. The prosecutor's looked at it and said it's okay as far as the statute is concerned and the Constitution and the case law, but the substance may not be correct. Okay, so we have to be, just because it's going to the prosecutor's office, that doesn't control our decisions and how we want a certain thing done within the contract. So approved as to form means something it's a limited purpose, if you will, in terms of the prosecutor's responsibility. That's it.
Any questions or comments? Thank you for that. I learned a new phrase. I learned a new phrase. Good information. Thank you. All right, next item on the agenda is our Get to Know the Library series, and it looks like we have Union Township Branch up tonight. Everybody.
Hello.
This is the Spotlight on Union Township Branch. I am Casey Ritchie, the branch manager, and I will be presenting this today. The Union Township Branch is located off of Glen S.C. Withamsville Road in the Eastgate area. The entrance of the Union Township Branch faces away from Information Place and Glen S.C. Withamsville Road into the parking lot. That's the view that you see here in the photo. We have a large digital sign and a regular sign on the branch facing the road. ODOT is currently constructing a flyover ramp from State Route 32 to Glen Estee. The construction has affected the entrance to the library through changing routes to access the library parking lot. And right now, currently, when major changes are made, branch staff are notifying CED, and CED is helping us alert guests through the website and social media. Here you can see our service desk. It's decorated for How I Read, the October reading program. We primarily use the standing desk, the service desk here, because of its proximity to the entrance and the self-checkout machines. And additionally, since all UT staff can provide circulation and reference services, we operate in just one area. We also have what is the former reference desk, but we use that for overflow and special services like the 3D printer and scanning and faxing to Job and Family Services. The first photo that you see here is of our paperback area, which is also a popular quiet area within the branch. The middle photo shows our reading area, which also houses the Puzzle Exchange and children's holiday books. And then the third photo is of the laptop bar and our more frequently used study tables. Here's a photo of the computer lab, which is located in the center of the branch. Since COVID, we've noticed that some of our guests prefer a bit more space, so we do have some computers at tables in other areas of the library. I forgot to turn my timings off. I'm very sorry. The landscape of the children's area is changing as we shift our materials to better serve the public, but it remains one of the busiest parts of our branch. After story time, you can find guests playing, picking out new books, and using the AWE children's computers, which you can see there along the green wall. And the play space also includes low tables, a play market with a very popular wooden cash register, and rotating learning toys. The Union Township Branch has two meeting rooms. We call them the large meeting room, and that is where we host most of our programming. We also have the small meeting room, which is located in the children's area, and staff utilize that space for smaller adult programs such as book club and senior cafe.
And both of the meeting rooms are very popular with guests, and they frequently book the rooms for meetings and other events. So, some brief branch history. In 1963, the library at 4462 Mount Carmel Tabasco Road opened its doors to the community. A large addition was completed in 1988, which tripled its size to 11,900 square feet. And then in 2010, the property at 4450 Ryan's Way, which is now Information Place, was purchased and announced as the new 20,000 square foot Union Township branch location. And a grand opening ribbon cutting was conducted on January 29th of 2012. So when fully staffed, the Union Township branch has a staff of 14. There are two librarians, including the manager, three service specialists, and nine library assistant specialists. So here you can see, I'm the first photo, the branch manager. Our programming team is made up of Jenny Longbrake, the youth services librarian, Hannah Schwager, the Youth Services Specialist, Ron Mooring, Adult Services Specialist, and Brittany Smith, Adult Services Specialist. The Union Township branch also has six full-time library assistant specialists, Maddie Beckman, Katie Bunnell, Aaron Elder, Jessica Holmes, Ben LaFevers, and Kyle McDade. And we also have three part-time library assistant specialists, Jax Kissay, and then Albert Hallenberg and Andrea Swenson, and they just started at the library in March. The Union Township branch focuses heavily on access, specifically through community engagement. The branch has relationships with the Union Township trustees and government, as well as other community groups such as Claremont Senior Services and IPM Food Pantry. Branch staff also attended a number of community events in the past year, including West Claremont State of the Schools, Union Township Farmers Market, Police Night Out, Community Baby Shower, and Union Township Movie Night. The Union Township branch also has a strong relationship with the United Way of Greater Cincinnati and has hosted them for a tax preparation program for the past several years. During the months of February, March, and the first 2 weeks of April, the United Way was in the branch 2 days a week to provide one-on-one tax services. The UT branch also works hard on other areas of the strategic plan. Branch staff have regular conversations about welcoming behaviors and CCPL internal service standards at staff meetings. In order to provide the best customer service possible for guests, library staff are also completing bi-monthly service reviews to ensure everyone is up to date on procedure. Staff are also encouraged to participate in professional development opportunities, and everyone in the branch is a member of at least one committee to share their knowledge and expertise within the system. The UT branch focuses on lifelong learning and provides programs appealing to a wide range of interests within the community. And in 2024, 8,428 guests of all ages attended programs both in-house and off-site. I think that's the most of any in the system, Chris can confirm. Not to brag or anything. The Union Township branch creates book bundles for children that are very popular. And we also have a lot of really great display space. So in the second photo, you can see our memory kits on display, as well as some promotion for Senior Cafe. And then we also must mention the UT very popular puzzle exchange. So we have, it's a passive exchange. We don't officially check them out, but guests can take them and then bring them back. And we see over 100 guest interactions a month through the puzzle exchange. Programming is an important aspect of education as it falls within the strategic plan. We offer well-attended story times for babies, toddlers, and all ages. And our Wednesday toddler time has grown so much that we're actually considering offering a second toddler time in the fall. Community members are always eager to attend the variety of youth programs, which you can see those pictured here. You can see the variety of youth programming hosted by Jenny and Hannah. In the pictures, the kids are having fun at the annual Gingerbread House events, homeschool hangouts always see a large number of guests, especially when there are science experiments involved. Jenny and Hannah also did some excellent off-site programming, including Billions of Bubbles at Veterans Park, which is up in the top right corner there, and the Summer Kids Club at the Eastgate Mall. And Summer Kids Club was a huge hit, and over the course of 4 weeks, they interacted with over 500 people. Our youth services team also has a strong relationship with West Claremont Schools, and in 2024, we created approximately 300 Free For Me cards. We attended kindergarten information nights, and I also had the opportunity to attend the West Claremont Partners in Education Breakfast. We offer a variety of adult programming and have a wide variation of ages attending our adult programming. Craft programs are always popular. Brittany had great success teaching participants how to create origami. Miniature dioramas were another popular craft. And the Union Township also hosts several monthly events, such as the popular Fiber Arts Club. And then Ron started the Dig It Garden Club. And since the first meeting in January, the attendance has steadily increased. And then Ron and I are also hosting timed puzzle competitions every other month, and we're hoping that those will take off soon, too. Last year, we hosted the Claremont County Senior Services as speakers, as well as the Council on Aging, and I worked with Claremont Senior Services to provide digital literacy programs to Claremont County seniors age 60 and up at 9 of the 10 branches. Through this partnership, we were able to provide digital literacy education to 241 seniors, and a minimum of 24 book librarian appointments came out of this programming. So, what resonates with UT's community? The Union Township community members love when they see the library staff so often at community outreach events, such as Police Night Out and the UT Farmers Market. And as previously mentioned, I had the pleasure of attending Kindergarten Information Night with Lynn and Andrea this year. You can see us with the West Claremont mascot in the first photo. And then Jenny and Hannah are frequently present at West Claremont school events, such as Teacher Professional Development Days and Parent Nights. And they also have a regular community outreach to Boys and Girls Club. And then Ron and Brittany do 5 outreach visits a month to senior service centers in our service area, and they've helped 3 of them start a book club, and they're actually visiting a new senior center in the area tomorrow. Our weekly story times average between 25 and 40 guests. We host 3 a week, and additional early literacy programs such as Play and Learn and Sensory Playtime also take place throughout the year. And in 2024, UT saw 3,200 children aged 0 to 5 and their caregivers attend programs in the branch. Additionally, Union Township has had great success with our book lockers, and the community has really embraced them. We frequently fill almost all 54 of the lockers, and the library has even purchased an extra bay that will be installed soon, and we're very excited about it. And then finally, UT's 3D printer has been very popular. Maddie, our 3D printing lead, maintains a queue for guests wanting 3D prints. So our current main challenge is keeping guests visiting the branch throughout the Eastgate Corridor construction project. Access to the library has changed drastically 3 separate times, the most recently being in September of 2024, when they removed access from Glenestee Withamsville to Eastgate North Drive. Traffic to the library is currently being maintained via Information Place. It is only approachable from Old 74. Technically, you can drive through the Meyer parking lot, but we are not recommending that. I believe that ultimately the construction will have a positive impact on the area and make the branch more accessible, especially with the addition of sidewalks for pedestrians. But for the time being, it has affected our guest access. But that is our main challenge right now. And that, thank you for listening to me and talk about the Union Township branch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. That was awesome. Anybody have any questions?
My question was going to be, how do you feel about the construction?
construction. What's the date that they're supposed to be? I heard 2026, but then Dawn said 27.
They sort of mentioned that it's going to be early 27 possibly now, but they're not sure. It's one of those, it's just like they don't know what they're doing. They, you know, they keep shutting off the water and stuff. Ask Casey.
Yes.
We haven't gotten any confirmation from MoDOT. I sent to my contact there about when they're planning on completing, and he has not sent me a positive word back yet.
When you have programs going on, how do you notify the community of the different programs that are presenting?
So right now, we focus a lot on hand selling programs. So hand selling. So when guests come into the library, all the staff were expected to find a way to promote at least one program for interactions with our guests. We've gotten a lot of sign-ups that way. So that's a staff goal that everybody has. And then we also have posters throughout the branch, and we always promote upcoming programs during programs that we're currently doing.
So all the promotions contact you at the branch with people that are coming in.
Well, and there's also social media posting. That's also a popular way for people to find out about programs.
What social media is used? What type of social media?
Facebook and Instagram.
And those are all run through the community engagement department.
And targeted emails.
Targeted emails, the website, the newsletter that you have received tonight is another way that we promote program. Just to sing a little of Casey's skills and talents, I think I hired Casey as a floater years ago. I think I was maybe at the Union Township branch. I can't remember if I was a director or acting director at the time. Anyway, Casey has started out as a floater in the system and then moved up eventually to the adult services librarian at Union Township, was the manager at Felicity, and then has come back to Union Township as the branch manager. Has done a great job in the system. She leads our Senior Connections Task Force, and I think she did mention how she was kind of spearheaded the partnership with Claremont Senior Services on the tablet distribution and the instruction of how to use library resources. So we're very appreciative of her efforts, and she does a great job.
Yeah, I love to hear about the senior programs, because we hear a lot about getting kids into the library, right, for early readers, but I like to hear the senior programs. And I was checking out the puzzle stuff on Facebook as well, so I think that's pretty cool.
I can attest to that as a very fun program. I had to go check that one out myself.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, let's move on to our next item on the agenda. So I believe fiscal officer's report.
Ms. We have our March financial report, your bank reconciliation, followed by your check register. And then you have your month-to-date, year-to-date fund and bank reports. Our end-of-month balancing report with our notations at the bottom for our reductions. We also have a few new items this month. We have a 2025 revenue and expense sheet that Mr. Humphrey and Mr. Ramos had spoken to me about. These are a way to tie your end-of-month balancing report and see this in a side-by-side, month-to-month. I have 2024 and 2025 thus far on there. Hopefully, that gives you some idea of, you can look at that. I plan on, as soon as the audit, we are right in the middle of our 2023-2024 audit. They're doing 2 years at once. Yay, me and Debbie. As soon as that is done, I'd like to go back and do some previous years just so we have some more. It would just be year-to-date totals if that works for everyone to help. I also included this sheet that looks like this. I won't include that every time, but this is a coding of what these different revenue or expenses are on this sheet here. So you can get an idea of what is included in all of those expenses. We have our state funding, which was just a little bit over, $5,000 over what they had predicted. We have our two housekeeping resolutions and our check descriptions. I don't have a fiscal officer's report this month and didn't realize I didn't have it until just the other day because of the audit. So I will let you know that we are, they're telling me they'd like to have that done by April. I don't know what much else they can ask for, but they surprise me every day. Debbie and I have also been attending webinars and updates from the state during the month on the state budget process. And we're preparing to go March or May 1st and May 2nd. We will both be in Columbus at a fiscal officers conference where we earn our CPIM credits for the year. But we will both be gone those days. So, of course, I don't know who schedules a fiscal officer conference on the first day of the month when you're trying to close the month before, but it's a new challenge every month.
That's they do their conference, you know, evaluation.
I can't imagine that any of the other fiscal officers won't have a comment about that. These new documents that I have, Mr. Humphrey, did those meet what you were looking for? Okay. Thank you very much. So I will include this every month now to update the statement. Yes, Judy.
Okay. Now on the color coordinated one?
Yes.
Where the menu is there. Was transfers and others supposed to be 55? Because there's all kinds of 56s and 57s.
Oh, you're right. 59. It should be 55 through 59.
I just wanted to ask the question because when I kind of looked at them.
Yeah, it should be 55 through 59. Okay. I apologize.
No. You're good. I figured it out, but
it has the right color, Judy.
I know it, but I saw that.
You're right. Was there any other questions or anything else I could?
I'd just like to make a comment.
Sure.
Thank you very much for all you're doing, because I know that the fiscal office is very busy right now. As you mentioned, our audit is not 1 year. Right now it's two. So
we have four auditors.
These two ladies have four auditors bombarding them with requests like all day long. So I'm going to just ask gently of the board any ad hoc or would love to have or would be nice to have reporting out of that office be put on hold until they get through this audit. Just to try and cut them a little bit of slack here.
I will. Thank you, Jenny. I appreciate that. But I will tell you that in doing this this new report, I really learned a lot doing that. I did. And that sounds silly, but I learned a lot about timing of doing reports, and I had never, you would think that that should be intuitive, but it was not. I was just told, this is the report you need to do, and this is the day we do it on, and it makes a big difference as far as when you do that, what you have done before you do that, and what you do after it, and it never, it should have occurred to me probably, but I was just trying to do the job, and I learned a lot about this, and I learned a lot about how I am going to do things going forward, like with the annual report, because that annual report also depends on when you do that, when you run those numbers, and
talking time of day.
Time of day, and you know, every Friday I do an expense sheet for the staff. we put it on our shared folder so they can see what money they have and what lines this week, you know, as it changes. And it takes a while to do. It takes about an hour and a half, and they're all asking for it on Friday. So I got to see it one time before I was in charge of doing it. So I try to get that done first thing on Friday, so I know it's done and everybody has it. But that is not the best time to do it, I have learned. And I did learn a lot, and I'm grateful for that opportunity. So if that helps any, if that makes anybody feel better, makes me feel better. I learned something, and I'm...
A valuable exercise on both sides,
right? We are
about
lifelong learning here, and I have learned something myself. So thank you very much.
And I don't know if we ever officially said the reason behind having 2 years in this audit instead of our usual one. The firm that we contract to perform the audit, so from a regulatory perspective, we are only required to audit every 2 years. But as best practice, we have always done it annually, and we paid a firm to do that. Apparently last year, they were having some resource challenges, and so they were unable to, you know, perform the audit timely. And we got into fourth quarter, and I told Melanie, I'm like, that we're done. You know, you're going to have so much work to do at the end of year that this is obviously not happening this year. So one of the items we shared with the audit firm was that going forward, Q2, Q3, not Q1, not Q4, to do these audits. So I don't know that we were expecting them to do both years. I was not.
I was shocked, but I'm glad to get it over with. I had hoped that we would have the 23 audit earlier because that was, you know, the year that I was learning it by myself, and I'd like to have been able to correct any mistakes going forward. Or any, you know, the way that they like things reported. It is what it is. I hate to say it like that, but so we will go forward from here. We will.
I think it's a good thing that we are getting both of them done because we can do that comparison, that retro look. I just want to make sure that they are.
And I have discussed that with them.
Going okay.
Forward once a year is.
Q2,
not,
Q3.
Yes.
This is when we do
so,
this. We don't do it in Q1 or Q4.
And they do know that. And
yes.
That's probably why they hit right at Q2 starting.
And
well, that's fine.
It sounds like if we wait later in the year, they lose staff or something. So, you know, let's get it done.
And we had the same auditor for several years,
mm-hmm.
and these are all new folks. So, and plus, I'm a new fiscal officer. We have had turnover in the HR office, so they're really looking at a lot of payroll and HR, you know, things. So it's not a bad thing. It's just a lot of things. So
they're doing what we
yeah.
want them to do. So this is it's always an opportunity.
I definitely want to know if there's something I should be doing differently sooner rather than later. So.
Yeah.
On the selection of the audit, is that something that's done through the state auditor and they give us a choice of different companies, or do we... I don't ever recall us being the ones that, I'm going to say, contracted with them. It was something that was chosen by the state.
Exactly sure how that was done by the previous fiscal officer, but this is the firm we've had for several years. They process our one arm of that firm also does our financial statement for the year, and then the other arm does the auditing. So it's kind of nice to have those together.
I seem to remember that the state used to do it, and then they contracted it out.
They contracted
it
out.
And then the state used to do it, and then they.
So we're not actively engaging
and whatever, then you could select from that group of entities and contract with them for several years, depending. I think the county water sewer district has done it for like 5-year periods of time or whatever, and or at least in the past. So that's within the last decade anyway.
I do think it's good to have the same one for several years in a row, the same firm, because you're familiar with them. Usually they're familiar with
you. It's continuity.
Consistency.
Right. It's right. Continuity.
So it just so happened, you know, they had personnel challenges and issues and had people off on leave, and you know, that happens with everybody. So I get it. I wished it hadn't happened, just because it's would have been nice to have that information sooner rather than later, but we will see what happens.
Well, I know we had challenges even in the years leading up to last year, where they were pushing it out later and later, and that's why I think us kind of putting our foot down and saying, look, Q2, Q3, if you get to, you know,
it is hard to remember that we are paying them, and I can make some requests. You always want to play nice with the auditor as much as you can, but you don't, no need to get anyone's hackles up, but
it's a partnership.
We are allowed to.
I think part of the issue became we didn't have any issues for years and years, and the same people were in place and whatever, and the process was consistent and whatever. So they could deal with others that were a challenge, mm-hmm. and we were more just like putting on a pair of comfortable shoes just to get it accomplished.
Rubber stamping.
Let's hope that's what we're still doing.
You'll be fine.
And Debbie has stepped in, and she ran a payroll completely by herself.
Yeah, good for you.
Which is a big accomplishment. I know that to some people that may not sound like a lot. It took me a long time to be comfortable doing that. She was able to complete that, and we have our documentation. We are making great strides and stuff like that, and she has been helping tremendously with gathering things and seeing what we're doing, and with this audit. So I am grateful for her assistance and her knowledge and her learning and her willingness to learn.
Two by two.
Yeah. Yay, team.
And honestly, you guys, like, always a smile on your face. Honestly, like, I pop in and say hi, and it's just like, we're doing the audit. And I'm like, okay.
We like to say we only cried once today.
Is that like the construction? It's been X number of hours since we last cried.
All days,
all right. Any other questions or comments for our fiscal office? Okay.
Thanks,
time for some motions. May I have a motion for the approval of the March 2025 financial reports, please? Ms. Bach makes a motion.
Second.
Do I have a second? Ms. Schluter, seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. All right. Now I need the motion for the March 2025 bills paid, please.
So moved.
All right. Ms. Waite makes a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Remus, seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Third, March 2025 bill paid for Anthem only. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Kasika makes the motion. Mr. Humphrey seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Let the record show that I abstain. All right. Next item on the agenda is our director's report.
Okay. We are nearing the completion of the UNC ESC, University of Cincinnati Evaluation Services Center survey. Say that.
That just rolls right off your tongue, doesn't it?
Fast. They have completed the work that they're going to do. We tried to do this 18 to 25-year-old group. We tried to do it at UC Claremont. We tried to do it at Union Township. We put all of our resources to use to try and get a group, and we still only had one person sign up, I think, at either event. So we've said it's time to move forward. We've taken all the community input that we're really going to get, and it's time to get the report. So they've sent in a draft. We have had a couple of suggested changes, and we are waiting for them to give us the final report. You have a look on your face, Ms. Doss.
I do have a look on my face. So, as I recall, the contract that we signed with them was for a certain number of events.
Pop-ups.
Since one of those did not occur, Does that impact, Mr. Humphrey's kind of chuckling over here, but he knows where I'm going. Does that mean that we have a reduction in the amount that we paid them since they were not able to do all of the pop-ups?
That will be an agenda item at our next final.
Thank you.
Yes. Just a reminder about a statistics that are available and then recently added to the branch department updates. I gave you a lot of information about library funding. So instead of rehashing all of this, does anybody have any specific questions? Right now, the budget is in with the Senate, and they're working from the House's version of the budget, which, to recap, the thing is the elimination of the public library fund as part of the general revenue fund, moving it as a separate line item. They had originally expressed that that was going to be done, and it was going to be based on per capita, basically a county's population base. They rolled that back, said that was a communication error. They're keeping the PLF formula as is, but they are still pulling it out as a line item. And the concern that we have, a great deal of concern, is line item budgets are easy to reduce or eliminate. So the messaging guidance that we're receiving from OLC is to kind of stay on target and try and reiterate the importance of keeping the governor's original proposal, which was to increase the PLF to 1.75% of the general revenue fund and leave it the way it is currently in the Constitution, I guess. We'll see. I don't know that there's a lot of real support for that across the state legislature. So
it doesn't really sound like it, does it?
It doesn't. That'll mean some really big changes for libraries going forward. There's some other things that they're talking about. I don't know if anybody got a chance to check out the Ohio Channel's recording of the budget vote and Mr. Representative Jack Daniels. I believe he's from the Akron area. He specifically talked about libraries, and one of the things that he talked about was the opportunity and time to seriously talk about consolidation. He pointed out that there's 251 library systems in the state, and it's time. There's too many branches, there's too many systems, and it's time to look at consolidation. In our situation, we have one library system in our county. Some counties have multiple library systems. Warren County has four or five different library systems. Butler County has two. So what does that look like? That's a lot of change and a lot of figuring out that isn't going to happen overnight, but I think it's coming. There's other things, to make note of. If you saw in the report, the trustee service years were reduced from 7 to 4, so any oncoming board members would serve 4.
How's that going to work? I don't understand, because there are 7 positions and 7 spaces that get to...
over a 7-year period?
Yeah.
Just be more turnover.
Nominated one per year.
More turnover.
7 years for 7 years.
Several years ago, I don't know if Casey went with me to Legislative Day a couple of years ago, but I was with the assistant director of Brown County, and we were visiting Rep. Byrd, and it was shortly after he had started his position in the House, and he asked, why were library trustees appointed versus elected? So just in the back of my head somewhere, it says, making this a 4-year term makes it easier to become an elected position possibly down the road. That is conjecture, no idea, but the rumor is out there that that's what they're thinking too.
Well, the thing is, there are 4 from the commissioners and 3 from the judges.
Right.
And how will they do that if you're only a 5-year term?
4-year term.
Only a 4-year term. Instead of 7, that...
Right.
Adds up to 7,
right.
So that works fine, but how do they do it otherwise?
I don't think they've provided any guidance other than the proposal to change it to a 4-year term. So
what's the school board term?
I don't know. And it should be
what is it?
3? 4.
Four?
Four.
Is it 4?
Yes.
So, it, like, this is where my mind's going, is are they trying to align this, the libraries with the schools? And if they would change that to a 4-year, is there a possibility that it's an elected position?
They'll also have to make
some changes. I'm not a politician. I'm not interested in any of that.
There's a lot of code changes that would have to happen. But
yeah.
If you remember, especially if you attended the OLC trustee training, is there's not one kind of public library.
Right.
There is a county district library. There's the, you know, so it, some library systems don't, public library systems in the state don't have 7-year terms. So they counted it in this legislation, in the bill, they called out the specific library types, which county library, of which we are, is would be affected by that. So who knows if the Senate will keep that or you know, the after they go through their process, the governor still has the right to veto items in the bill. So
why not a veto, though? We can't change the wording.
Right. Yeah.
Before you continue, Chris, did anyone else on the board reach out to our representatives?
Yeah.
I heard them.
Did you get any responses?
I got responses from both representatives.
I did.
And?
They were positive. They were supportive
of
our position that we needed 1.7 and that we needed to have a continuous funding process, not line item.
I received a response from one, but not the other, so I was surprised by that. But the response I received was really just an acknowledgement of what the current state is and not necessarily any acknowledgement of why we're so concerned by this being a budget line item. So I was just curious to see, because I'm sure I figured we would, several of us would be reaching out as well. So
I attended a meeting last Wednesday, and each one of those representatives gave a dissertation, one more than the other. They were gung-ho with getting rid of the current system and moving it on and how it would be in the best interest and whatever, and moving on to the Senate, along with a couple of other things like taking the office of the county coroner and making an appointment instead of an election and whatnot. And so I came away from that. It was at the end of a very long meeting, and I just buttoned my lip and thought, okay, I'm going to wait for tonight to hear the rest of the story. And at least the two former library board members who are now state representatives mm-hmm. are in favor of moving forward. In fact, both of them voted yes, one of which I'm told voted yes because they wanted to be compliant with their team. Now that just made me feel so positive.
So we'll see what happens.
Well, it goes to the Senate and then the conference committee, and then the governor still has line item veto. So I don't, you know, they've been talking about the local government fund for ever, would you say, Ed? It's always a healthy diet.
Every time, every 2 years.
Because it's like, okay, where can we get more money?
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your report, but I just wanted to get a little bit more feedback, so thank you.
So that's the budget.
On further reflection, I think I was saying certain things to them, and they just, I think I got more acknowledgments, too, than I did.
Well, it's politics, right? We'll just
yep.
leave it at that. That's why I like our current system of the appointments versus running to be elected to the board. Like, that is just, yeah.
And one of the two members is involved in administration, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
so could hardly speak out against it.
Sure.
You know, so.
It's politicized.
We'll see.
Yep.
We can always hope for the next governor.
So moving on from the budget, Library to Go, we've had a couple of things going on there. We brought in, BWC provides ergonomics training. It's a free service that they provide. So because of the change in workflow and increasing the number of deliveries and collections that we're doing, we brought them in. They've kind of assessed the layout and are going to be making some suggestions for just, we want to make sure we make it as good for staff as possible to reduce any potential injuries. So I'm thankful for Julia for arranging that. They're gonna come back again and train the other half of the staff. I think it's at the end of this month. So some of the suggestions were easy fixes that can be done right away. And if there's anything else, Dawn, that you would want to share regarding?
Well, I think that what they've suggested, there's a couple things that I don't feel that are in our best interest because of staff injuries. I'm saying a conveyor system for the bins. But there's a lot of things that we could do in-house ourselves that people weren't thinking about. Like just the matter of turning a bin 180 degrees to make it easier for the staff. Just new chairs was one of the things. We've taken care of that for them. You know, just making the work environment more user-friendly, that we've already done things in-house that's going to show that we've already made an effort when they come back.
Have we had any injuries?
No, we haven't had any injuries. It was just concerns from staff about potential injuries and what they were feeling.
In anticipation?
Risk.
Yes.
I think there could have been some soreness here and there, you know, so we wanted to make sure that didn't turn anything more significant. I remember in my first job, I got tendonitis in both wrists because we weren't automated, and we called it slipping books, and I was doing this with my wrists every day, and repetitive injury is a real thing, and anything we can do to try and prevent that as we grow the system. I thought that was really great to bring them in, you know, as part of the process of the creation of the department. So, and Lynn's involved in that too, of course. Any other comments that you have, Lynn, about that?
No, just looking forward to the sort of training with the rest of the staff on the 30th and seeing if there's anything that comes out of their, any further recommendations that come from their questions.
If I may, one other point that was brought up that has been taken care of internally was that staff were under the impression that they had to process all 70 bins within a day's time. And we've sort of said, no, do not. That, you know, that's been reduced down tremendously. We're only supposed to do so many in a day. So that will help a lot with what they're processing in once the returns are back.
Not sure if I should share this visual or not, but when you were talking about like conveyors and you're talking about that, I've just got that Lucille ball with the candy. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like, that's all 70. Oh, no.
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 We also have updated the job descriptions because of the change in the workflow. The library assistant specialist position, we have eliminated that at the Owensville position, and now the title is the library services and outreach assistant. So it's just updated to reflect that the work that they're currently doing now. And staff had talked about that with us as part of a concern, and we knew that was coming. And then with the increase in facilities, it was time. And then finally, we went ahead as part of the capital budget, which Don will touch a little bit more further on down the agenda, is we did get the replacement of the puppet van. And I'll just leave the rest of that for Don to go over. The next thing that I have is one of the things that I distributed to you ahead of the meeting was this drawing of the Felicity building. So if you could pull that out and imagine, if you will, paint a picture in your mind. I got a call from Linda Burkholz. She is the daughter of Paul and Mary Fisher, who donated the land for the Felicity branch to be built on. And she called me up and she said she would like to fund a bench and a tree and a commemorative stone and in her parents' honor for that gift to the library. So we had some discussions, and we really wanted to pull the decision-making over to the library. And first I want to get your approval to accept this. We already have a tree, and we have a location. We kind of plan this out. Is this going to work? So we already have a tree that is appropriate for the space. We would do some landscaping there in that stepping stone where that shaded area is. You can see kind of what looks like a stump of a tree. And then the bench is something that is very similar to the benches we have here at Miami Township, an all-weather bench. And then also this stone. Books fall open, you fall in just like love. Paul and Mary Fisher. And then the date. Not exactly sure the significance of the date, I don't know. But then this would be a stepping stone in commemoration of that. So if the board is okay with moving forward with that, she will donate the cost of all of those items to get that work done at the branch, at the Felicity branch. So there will be no cost incurred by the library.
So what's the story between their connection to that branch?
Like, they own the property. And that's donated the property as
Do we have a motion?
You were asking prior to that. Why did they do that?
Right, basically, just
that.
Like, were they
know.
Just big power users of the library, and obviously love to read because of the saying?
Well,
there
wasn't a Felicity branch before then,
was that our 10th branch?
Jesus says no.
Owensville was
the last one.
Huh. But even if they weren't, I mean, were they going to the other branch? Like, I'm just curious to hear more of the story, because I like to hear the story,
yeah.
So it's okay.
I don't know that whole story.
Okay.
I can find out more.
Great.
So we're looking for a motion. Okay, sorry. Mr. Humphrey, go ahead.
I make a motion we approve the drawing and plans for the benches and trees.
And accept the donation.
And accept the donation.
All right, Mr. Humphrey makes the motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, Ms. Waite seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. There you go.
Great, thank you. She'll be very excited about that.
Yes.
If I may, Chris, she has determined that she wants to have a dedication service on the 18th of May. Which we will have everything in place if there's anyone that wishes to attend. I plan on being there myself, just because I've been pretty heavily involved with her in taking care of this, just to make the connections and stuff.
May 18th is what day of the week?
That's a Sunday.
All right.
And I'll get the time. I think it was 1:30, but I'll have to check on that to make sure.
Just let us know. Thank you.
Oh, we'll communicate that out, and we'll get a little bit more history about her parents' relationship with the library. The Bethel roof, you've seen my report, so I'll skip. That's also on the old business. Wanted to share that we have expanded our genealogy services by becoming an affiliate of Family Search, which is part of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And if you don't know, it is probably the largest genealogy database in the world. So we're really excited about that. It's a fixed site, so you have to be at the Batavia branch and on the specific computer that the link to the database is made available. So you have to be using that specific computer. So, and that's not terribly unusual. With some of our databases, you have to be at the library. This particular one, you have to use this specific computer. As another add-on of expansion of services, we have added the Wall Street Journal as a newspaper that you can have electronic access to. Yes. So that, I believe, is going to start in May or June. Is it going to be? It's one or the other.
June
1. Okay. So starting June 1, we will be you will have access to the Wall Street Journal, very similar to the Cincinnati Inquirer and USA Today and New York Times. So just a little explanation of the hours bank. So we have frosted positions from our dip in the PLF, the instability of the PLF last year, and we haven't filled all of those positions, and we want to be measured about how we go about filling them as we assess more long-term needs and priorities. But the positions are funded. So while we're, you know, some branches are short in hours because they have other staffing, that maybe somebody's out on leave or they're down a person. So any part-time position can pick up extra hours as long as they don't exceed 29, really, that would then become a full-time eligibility for health care. So full-time, part-time staff can pick up some extra hours. So if you read in a branch update that somebody has are utilizing their hours bank, that's what that's in reference to.
What is the plan to unfrost them? What will it take to unfrost them?
Well, we really want to establish some metrics and compare that with the need, because library usage has changed a lot since COVID. I don't want to say not all of those positions need to be filled, but I'm not sure all of those positions need to be filled. So
what's the process to get us there, and when will we be there?
So we're working on looking at a metrics sheet that I've gotten from another library system. It's a little difficult to use, and taking a look at that, plugging in some numbers, and then we want to prioritize too, since there's most every branch is affected in some regard. So we want to make sure that we prioritize it in terms of need.
I think the most significant thing is the fact of however many positions we have, whether they're an incumbent is there or they're vacant at this point in time. They're all fully funded, so if we would find the need, it would be there with no additional expense from the appropriation process. The other aspect of it is, I have to applaud you looking at the metrics of whether or not, kind of like what they're doing, it could be our own DOGE right here in Claremont Mountain, to take a look at what it is. What? You have a hearing difficulty? The very fact of whether. Okay. Other aspect of it is whether or not there are times of the year that we may find ourselves in need of the word part-time, which then takes us away from benefits having to be offered also. I have to applaud your efforts in looking at the metrics of that and taking a look at having what we need, but not necessarily what we want.
I mean, in general, this is being a responsible employer and looking at the needs of the branches and the staff. And this should be like a continual thing that you're constantly assessing to see, okay, well, you know, look, we're looking at circulation lower here. Why is that? What's going on? You know, where can we move things around? And you've been doing that. You've been trying to flex and change and see, like, COVID was a reset button for everybody. I don't know how many years we're going to be out where we're saying, oh, because of COVID, we had to do this, and that impacted this. But it's a continual process, right?
Right.
So as new technologies come on, new services are added, it's always changing. The only thing constant is change. But I echo your sentiments that we appreciate the fact that you're paying attention to this and you're using those metrics as well.
Thank you.
It's almost like a scoring model, right?
Sort of, yeah. It's complicated. It's not, we've had a team meeting and we looked at it's going to take a little bit to size it to Claremont County and our metrics. But yes, we are working on that. And then, meanwhile, we wanted to make sure that those hours that are funded could be utilized as needed. So, thought it was a good idea. Virtual meetings update. So Lynn and Doug, and actually Teresa as well, have been meeting with technology vendors to explore kind of what our options are for the various meeting types, if it's a hybrid or if it's completely remote, what that looks like. And then once they have some solid data, then we can have our bylaw and policy review committee to take a look at.
To draft a policy.
To work on the policy, right. We have removed the minimum age requirement for juvenile library cards.
What did it used to be?
It was nothing. Then it went up to 5, and now it's back down to nothing.
0 to 17.
There was
right?
a 3 in there somewhere. So yeah.
I saw it on the web. 0 to 17.
Yeah, it's juvenile card, right? So I thought it was also in. I believe it's Amelia's branch update, how they had an event, and a lot of kids got brand new library cards that they wouldn't have had an opportunity to get before. So, I see a skeptical face.
No, it's not a skeptical.
Yes, yeah.
Why would we even put a limit on those to begin with?
Well, at the time, it had a lot to do with video theft.
Okay.
That parents would come in, they would check out the maximum amount of videos on every card and in the family, and then they wouldn't return them. And so you were looking at replacement costs, you were looking at collection costs, you were, you know, lots of cards that we had. It was
okay.
So it was an old policy that really the video obviously was streaming video. DVDs are no
that
longer.
It's going away a little bit. Okay.
It is.
So this
yeah.
was why we can't have nice things kind of deal.
So
got
this
it.
With the 0 to 17, or I'm gonna go to the age of 12. It seems to be an age of reason in other entities. Who's responsible?
Oh, the parents.
Yeah, so
the parents are always responsible.
For the minors,
sure
yeah.
It
yeah.
just kind of like said, okay, well.
No, the parents have to fill out the applications
right.
and sign
right.
out. Yes.
Any
yes,
minor
yes.
under 18 years of age,
it's the parent.
Is what the website says.
Yep.
The parents have to sign and come into the library to do that.
Right.
But
shout out to our very own Lynn Baird, who was recognized at Salute to Leaders. She won the Union Township Citizen Award. Congratulations, Lynn. Lynn has also, I think, the year prior was the police recognition.
Law enforcement
award, too. So we're very proud of Lynn.
Great job.
Thank you.
Excellent.
In your packet, you will have also received the invite to the Imagination Library event that's coming up soon, April 29th. The library that Dolly built is the documentary film that will be shown, and they're going to be having pizza and popcorn and soft drinks and all lots of fun things like a dress up like Dolly, who somebody's already told me they have a costume to do that. I think that'll be fun to see. So come out and support the Imagination Library.
I'm looking at Dawn.
I'd like to see that too. All right. So your report also had the statistics. You got your new May-June Library Insider that has all kinds of great summer programs. Also has the summer reading information on the back so people can participate and play along and conduct their summer reading journey using our newsletter, as well as there's many ways to participate, but we try and make it as accessible as possible. And then also, Teresa and her team finished up the annual report, the infographic that we've been doing for the last several years. So that is also distributed today. And the last thing that I have, Ms. Kasika and I had a conversation about the branch department updates, and I was just interested in some of the data, the arrangement of the data, and I was interested in, this is an old format that we've been using for many, many, many years. A former board member had suggested this particular format, and I just was wondering if there were any suggested changes you would like to see. Ms. Casicas was arranging the branches separately from the support departments.
In the same report, but
in the same
so
report,
that you would have all the branch activities there. And then some of the things that the branches were identifying were really in facilities or ISD or whatnot, and that you would have a complete picture. In other words, at facilities, if they had, let's just say they had 250 requests for services and they completed this many, and these are, this is the range of things that they did, as opposed to the litany that's there. And I understand that's tooting and whatever about what's going on in your branch or whatever, but I thought with the, what I'm really interested in is what's happening at the branch are the programs like the child at Goshen that would rather go to the library to do 3D rather than go have an ice cream treat or otherwise when she had been there the day before and was so enticed by it or whatever. Just those kinds of things or the kinds of pictures that they're showing, that whether it's working on puzzles or working on some of the programs that are there, so that it's a continuous litany so that you can see it in the 10 branches that we have. Here's what's happening at these branches. Here's what we're doing, as opposed to a number of statistics. I did 17 notary things, and I'm glad that we have those services, and congratulations that we have the people that are there to do them, and that we're providing that additional, at I'm sure at no additional cost, so it's a convenience for the citizenry, because I'm sure you don't even have to be a library holder in order to go in and have those kinds of things done, and the kinds of programs that we're doing there. And I guess I'm just more interested in programs and photos or those kinds of things that are happening with children or the seniors or any of those kinds of things, as opposed to a litany of statistics.
If we have a litany of statistics, we're going to put them in a spreadsheet, so we've got branches down the side and the statistics across the top, so that we can compare and contrast instead of seeing it as part of a paragraph and then looking at the next paragraph.
And if the facilities are pulled out, I'd still like to know XYZ was done at Bethel. XYZ.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I'm not asking for that to be eliminated. I'm asking for, let's find out what's happening at facilities, especially as pertains to either capital needs or additional expenses and whatnot in that particular instance of at each one of the branches. I mean, the issue at Williamsburg with the that we talked about in the capital budget, but also
but moving that to the facilities department.
The branch. All those things are at the facilities, and it just tells us here's the kinds of things that are happening in these 10 branches under facilities, as opposed to we had 90 requests and we were able to fill 75 because they required additional parts, time frame or scheduling or whatever. It's just dialogue, I guess. And I'm looking for content.
So I like what we see personally. I like it as is. But I get what you're saying about aligning some of the branch updates under the department updates. So I'm not averse to seeing that and getting some examples, but I'm also okay as it is. So how do I put this? I think it's important to weigh the amount of time that you would have to put into revising it significantly and make sure that that's bandwidth that you guys have. But if you do, right, then I'm all for hearing more of the stories, too, about things happening at the branches.
Right.
I don't know. Any other, Mary Jo, Ernie, you commented. Do you have any?
I kind of like it the way it is, although I wouldn't be opposed to them putting all the branch information together, then putting all the like administrative stuff together, so that you're looking at all the branch stuff and then all the department stuff. But other than that,
all of the department stuff really is an application to assist the branches.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Any other preferences, Ms. Bach, Ms. Schluter?
I
have no other preference. I think as long as it's working, just keep going with it.
Yeah. I agree.
Mr. Humphrey? Okay.
Okay.
Well, right. It certainly wouldn't be hard to split out the branches from the departments, and then we can go from there. So thank you for your input. And that's everything that I have under my section.
It was very comprehensive director's report this month. There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
A lot to talk about.
Yeah,
thank you. Okay. All right, moving on to our next agenda items. This is our new business. Resolution 2025-12. This is the acceptance of gifts to the library donations as listed. Before I ask for a motion for this, I'll just make a comment here. You guys see a fair number of donations in memory of Kathy Turner. She lived in the area in Batavia and was a frequent patron of the Batavia branch, to the point where, and I know her family, and my husband and I know her family, and she didn't want to move because that meant that she couldn't walk to the branch. So I just wanted to call that out there. So we appreciate those donations in her memory. So do we have a motion to accept those gifts?
Can I just ask one question? What is the Lurie? Is that, am I saying that right? What the $150 donation was to be used as, just, I mean, I didn't know where that.
Brie Cheese?
That was just the name they used.
That was the name they used? AKA Anonymous, I'm guessing?
Anonymous, I guess. That was the name they used when they made the donation.
Yeah.
Is that for her also?
No.
Oh,
just
that one was separate.
Would be good. No, just wherever would be used. I'm sorry, it says to be used where it will be to do the most good for the library. It didn't specify a branch or a...
And so how did we... I guess it's another one of those. How did we get that?
It was an online donation.
An online donation? Okay.
All right. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
All right. Ms. Bach makes the motion. Do I have a second? Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Schlier. You guys are...
Sorry.
Is it because you're way over there? Ms. Schluter made the motion. Ms. Bach, would you like to second?
Yes.
All right. Ms. Bach seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion passes. Next item is Resolution 2025-13. This is the disposal of unneeded or obsolete library inventory. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Ms. Waite makes the motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. Mr. Ramos seconds. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Ms. Phelps?
Yes.
Mr. Ramos?
Yes.
Ms. Waite?
Yes.
Ms. Casita?
Yes.
Mr. Humphrey?
Yes.
Ms. Bach?
Yes.
Ms. Schluter?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
I have a question on that. Do we try to sell some of this stuff, or is it just thrown in the trash?
No, there's various different, the obsolete inventory.
Yes, it all goes through book sales, unless it's not appropriate for sale, and then it gets recycled. So we don't throw it in the trash.
Like computers or printers.
Oh,
like that.
Those things we work to find additional homes for, and then they're recycled.
Okay.
We've partnered with local nonprofits and other things for reusable items. We also have one final correction to the minutes.
No.
Instead of January 27, 2025 minutes, it should say February 24, 2025 minutes on the first page.
Make a motion to approve the minutes with that change.
All right. Mr. Humphrey made the motion. Ms. Bach, you seconded last time for the ease of record keeping. Are you good to second?
In the heading, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
February 24.
Okay, old business. So this goes back to capital projects. It's the last item on our agenda. We have three of those. The handicap parking here at Miami Township, the Bethel roof, and the purchase of the library vehicles. I did want to add one to that because I think that last month when we did the budget committee report, we had talked about the various capital projects and what the committee was recommending for the board to approve. And Ms. Kasika,
I'm taking us back to the signs. And I think the committee's, if I'm correct in my recollection, the committee's recommendation was to pause on the digital signs at Williamsburg and Goshen. Is that correct? All right. And I don't know that we were as clear about that in our meeting last month when I was reviewing minutes. So I just wanted to bring that back and make that statement before we move into the handicap parking and the roof and the vehicles.
And part of that reason was simply because of the expenditure in and as it relates to the Bethel roof.
That's right.
More than anything, and also whether or not we were going to be quote-unquote doubling up on two vehicles instead of one.
Right.
And given the fact that I think I saw, was it 45 or 54? Did I transpose my digits for the cost of the vehicle that from Castrucci?
Don will have.
Don's going to talk about that here in just a minute.
I'm just saying, in the documentation, it identified the amount, and in that particular instance, I think the signs were estimated at $50,000 a piece.
50 each.
Am I right about that?
Mm. Thank you.
Yes.
We just didn't really talk about that one last month, and I wanted to make sure that was clear.
Mr. Ramos had a real concern about that in a capital budget meeting about what are we doing about that, as if I recall. And so we had to tell him that while we moved the amount up to $700,000, that it would be dependent on a couple of different things, one of which we know.
And one of which we don't.
And one which is the major aspect that has to be done.
Yes.
It's in the queue.
Don, I think you're up.
Okay.
I don't know which one you want to talk about first.
For the sake of convenience for you all, I prefer to do the Miami Township parking lot last.
Me too. Thank you.
Because we need to use the slide.
Okay. Fair enough.
I would like to. We'll go into the vehicles. Let's talk about the vehicle. We recently purchased a 2025 transit van. I don't need that.
Yeah, you do. It's for the recording.
Yes, I'm sorry, I forget about that. We purchased a 2025 transit van that is better equipped than the one we bought in 2024. It has a better camera system, which would be safer and more convenient for our staff operating. So our proposal was to take that vehicle, and we're going to equip it as we were with the 2024 Library to Go van, wrap it and have it take the place of the original Library to Go van.
For the pop-ups. Yes.
And things of that nature. We want to do that because everything is just transferable. From 2024 to 2025, there was no changes in the size of the vehicle, or there will be no additional cost to that. Other that will come out of just general fund budget that we will have to do for the other van for a couple of minor items like a partition to divide the cargo off from the drivers in the other van, and just a couple of minor items. We felt that wrapping the vehicle was a necessity for our advertisement, for getting out to reach out to the community to know that we are out and about. I know there was some discussion, but that's basically that on the vehicle. I did look in, and I'll give some feedback. I did look into magnetic signs. Magnetic signs are not convenient. They fall off of vehicles after a certain amount of time. And with the new vehicles, they are not adhering to the metal or lack of metal on those
vehicles.
Right. Okay?
Yeah.
To be absolute about it.
That's fair.
That's just why I am not recommending any metal signs for the vehicle.
That's fair.
Question, the price, at least in the bill payments, $42,872. Does
yes.
that include the trade-in, and what did we get for the trade-in? Or
we got, not I don't have the exact number, but it's between $9,000 and $10,000 for the trade-in. So that reduced the amount down to the 42.
So that is the reduction.
Yes.
There.
That's more than we had anticipated for that
exactly.
trade-in.
Yes. Yes.
Given the circumstances.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Good job, Don.
They did us right, and that also goes into why. With the cost of the vehicle, we decided not to purchase two of them. We didn't feel that we would get the right, a good comeback to us on it, that they could not give us a good, decent price to buy two of them at the same time. So that's why we did not go with buying two vehicles.
So the total price for this new vehicle with the gift wrapping, is what I'm going to call it, is how much?
It will be, with the wrapping, will be roughly about $46,000. That's with the wrap, because the wrap will cost us $3,800.
And is that the only thing we need to do? Did I hear you say?
There was a partition as well.
Right, and a partition that was, it was under $500 for
okay.
partition.
We're trying to get your... $50,000, everybody. At least for Williamsburg, even though I live in Goshen.
Okay. Any questions for Don on the vehicle? Going once, going twice.
I see a lot of heads shaking.
All right, you're up next for Roof.
Roof, yes.
Roof.
We in conjunction with our meeting with Kevin Rogers, our previous owner's rep that we used for this building, he made some recommendations of companies to come and do a outside evaluation on the Bethel roof so that we would get the best product to put on the roof. We have had two companies respond. I'm evaluating them to see where we're going to get our best, what I feel is our best evaluation on the roof, and just to see where we're at, what they recommend, and we can look at that aspect of it for the best, for lack of better words, the best bang for our buck, okay?
So, do I understand correctly, we're having roofing companies come and assess and give us...
No.
Who is making the decision or the recommendation of the style of repair that needs to be done for the roof?
These two companies are
roofing consultants.
Roofing consultants. That's all they do.
Okay.
They consult on roofs. They go to different locations. They do major buildings to looking at the structure of the roof, the type of roof that's on there, recommendations for just changing the roof style if need be, and things of that nature to eliminate the problems that you know have occurred when it was built.
Okay.
So they're evaluation analysts?
Basically, yes.
So they're going to tell us if that membrane is going to be truly the best option. We may have a different option than the membrane.
Yes,
okay.
There's going to be other options that I'm sure they're going to come back at us with, because I've asked them for three options if they could come up with, you know, to stay with, so that we
with
have
the pros and cons for each and stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Architect?
The architect, we've still got the architect that we can use if we need to. The one company, they do have architects on their staff also.
Just remember, the architect is who designed, not the current architect we use, but an architect designs the roof. They're about design, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not, and Katie can probably speak to this better than anyone here, but they're about the design, not necessarily the functionality.
Correct. Especially not the structural integrity of the entire building.
Absolutely.
They wouldn't take care of that.
So it's more artistically?
Yes.
Yeah.
Architecture is strictly architecture and design. This would be either a structural integrity of the entire building, which, as the architect, we would defer to the roofing company.
You would defer to who?
The roofing company.
The roofing company.
The people he has coming out right now to look at, that's exactly who the architect would defer to make sure you're making the most sound investment.
And frankly... that's going to be a segue into our final conversation about design over function when we talk about the handicap parking, right?
Yes.
So.
Before we move on to that, though, one of the things that I'd like to let kind of talk with the board a little bit about is once we get the actual roofing consultant to come out and give us a good
assessment
and proposal for what they think to fix the problem, is would like the board to entertain a relationship with a owner's rep to guide us through the process.
In other words, a construction manager?
Yes, in essence, because none of us are roofing experts, and we want to make sure that what's happening there is the right.
That's a big investment.
It is a big investment, and we just want to make sure. If anybody was on the board during the Amelia parking lot replacement with the overruns and the change orders that happened there, basically doubled the price of that project. And I think if we had had an owner's rep there at the beginning, we wouldn't have gone through a lot of that. And I think it's important because we really don't know when you look at the type of leaks that they're having, what at our construction with the Bethel roof meeting with the Bricker Graydon is that it sounds more like it could be a flashing issue and that the flashing wasn't high enough in the original construction of the branch. And so, you know, we just want to make sure our best interests are being served. So what I'd like to do is after we get the consultant is maybe have the owner's rep come in and do a presentation for the board to see if you're interested in pursuing that.
I like it.
Okay.
I think that's a great idea. I'd rather have more information than not.
Right. You can always turn it down, but
right.
I think it...
Right.
This Bricker Graydon, I wasn't aware when we were talking about it initially that they were a law firm.
Right.
Experienced in public sector procurement and construction management. And Kevin, who we are using here in this particular, I don't know how we got them, but the
we haven't engaged with anybody yet.
But is that who we are looking at for construction management for proceeding with the oversight of the actual construction?
That's because
not suggesting anything. I'm just asking the question based on
so
what I read in your report.
So you're asking, would that be the company we use to come in and do the presentation?
I think that's who we would use to come in and do the presentation.
Okay.
Whether or not that's who you would want to use or if we would want to do an RFP to see who else, because we did an RFP for Miami Township. I think, and that's how we got the owner's rep for that. There was more than one firm that presented themselves, and then the board selected. It was at the time Construction Process Solutions that got sold to another company, and then Kevin went with them, and then now he's with Bricker Graydon.
And
so,
I fully recommend that we do an RFP so that we can get the company's qualifications, so that as a group we can converse on them and look at that and make sure that we are back to getting the best bang for our buck. What we're going to pay them to do the consulting and do, or not do the consulting,
oversight.
But the overseeing of the job.
It's insurance, basically.
Yes.
It's insurance to make sure that whomever we select to do the actual repairs is doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Set aside to do it in the time frame in which it's set aside to do it. In other words, the
management
keep
them on
the
schedule.
Entire aspect of it.
No sub contractors that take us off of, you know, but with supply chain and everything else that's going on right now, I think it's a good idea.
The sequence is to get
yeah.
a couple of different opinions as to what needs to be done,
mm-hmm.
and then who makes the decision as to which one of those choices we choose.
I think that would be a concerted effort. I think we need to, you know, look at what they are presenting and make sure that we are getting what we feel that we need and what they are recommending.
You could put both those proposals in front of me, Don. I'm not going to know.
You're not
going to
know squat diddly, which is the
so
same
what
thing.
So what I'm asking is, and I
well, that's why
is
we
I,
engage in owner's rep.
That's the back of the owner's rep then. I'm sorry. Yes.
So what comes first, the owner's rep or the proposals? Do we get somebody on board for that and then move on to get RFPs for proposals?
So the first step would be to listen to these roofing consultants, see what they recommend, put out an RFP, and then engage an owner's rep to help us scour these RFPs so we can make the best decision.
Thank you, Ms. Bach.
But
that's what I would. I mean, that makes total sense.
But don't you use the proposal as the basis for your RFP?
No, we would create the RFP. So the owner's rep, and we could engage an owner's rep to help us create the RFP. But that roofing consultant, whoever we use, would also be able to help us just create. It could even just be a one-page RFP that says these are exactly the qualifications that we need. Give them to us, along with the pricing and schedule, and then we'll go from there.
It doesn't have to be super detailed in the weeds. As a matter of fact, sometimes that makes the RFP more difficult if we're super detailed.
Specific as opposed to generalization.
I think we just need to hear back from the roofing consultants before we do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we don't know what we're dealing with. I mean, we really don't know what we're dealing
right.
with until... And if you're getting three recommendations from two different companies, that at least gives us some information to look at. Like, they may be all consistent. They may have just be all over the place. But we won't know until we see that.
Well, let me clarify. I've asked them to give me three recommendations, but there's a possibility, and they may come back and say, this is the only thing that we recommend, and we go from there. And that's why we're bringing them in, because they are the experts in this field. Let them recommend what we need. But I've asked them for three, if they can, is the way I put it to them.
That's fair.
Is there any cost in ascertaining the proposal?
No.
For their services, the RFP doesn't cost, but for their services,
yeah, that's
yes.
Right. Yeah.
For
yes.
the consultant, the roofing consultants, there will be a cost.
Let me rephrase that. You ask who to get at least three proposals?
The roofing consultants.
And the roofing consultant is who?
There's two
which
companies.
Companies.
Okay.
Which
I'm
just
trying
to
see.
What's the name
who's,
of the two companies?
Okay, I've got A&E Prime and Mays Roofing Consultants.
Okay, so you've chosen two entities based on your experience or whatever.
No, based on a recommendation by Kevin Rogers.
Thanks. That's what
I
guess that's what I was trying to figure out. Who gave you those names to ascertain those quotes or proposals?
Right.
We need a flow chart. We're getting to the point where we need a process flow chart that said we did this a year, did this. It's getting a little complex, but yeah. Okay. We're good.
So A&E and Mays are charging for their recommendation?
They will charge a consulting fee, yes.
But we're going to choose... My understanding, you're going to choose one consultant after they give you kind of their proposal of how they're going to manage the project.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
So we're not going to get proposals from two different. We're not going to get them to do the evaluation of both of them to do an evaluation of the roof. You're going to select one of the two,
or one of the three.
But there's
one of the two consultants.
One of the two companies.
One of the two companies to provide their three recommendations.
Yes.
We're not going to pay both consultants to do the evaluation on the roof. He's going to evaluate their proposal to us on how they do their services and then determine which one is the best consultant to use.
Yes.
Does that make sense, Ms. Fogg? Yeah, we wouldn't normally hire two.
So far we haven't spent any money.
We haven't paid
we haven't spent
money
any
for
money
anything.
Yet.
And is that fee that... assessment fee, if we're choosing that company, do we get that back if they're awarded the job? Do we
know? No, because they're not the owner's rep necessarily.
They would not be
it's
the owner's rep.
It's just an outside, instead of going with the roofing company that says you need a membrane roof,
right.
We are going to pay a consultant to tell us what we really need, who doesn't have any skin in the game on what product that we use, because they're not selling us the product.
Got it.
If that makes sense.
I think it, yeah, it makes sense to me now. I think the roofing assessment or roofing consultant title was getting a little confusing, at least for me. So
yeah,
they're not doing the actual work. They're the ones that can look at it, assess it, and say, this is what you need to have done. They would not be doing it. They would just tell us what needed to happen. Then we would go with the owner's rep, who would oversee the project, and we'd make the determination of which company did the work itself when we got to that point.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's
the flowchart's in my head now.
It's the analysis.
Yes.
Okay.
This is the analysis.
None of us, I think, were comfortable at the budget committee meeting with just the one proposal and
especially the type of proposal
it
was.
Right.
I was like,
yeah. And what they were suggesting about putting something over
and
something
it may be
else.
Completely it was legitimate, you know,
the
like,
membrane over the existing
yeah.
peaks,
yeah.
valleys, and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think we all feel a lot more comfortable having the consultant. That's what they do. They know roofs. Let's have them come out and really see what's going on with that roof. Because in our conversation with Mark Evans and Kevin Rogers, they were talking about they might pull pieces of the roof back and look behind, you know, so there's really a lot to evaluating a roof. So
it's not standing on the street or standing in the parking lot eyeballing it and saying, oh, yeah, this is what you
yeah.
can do.
We're
yeah.
sending
gotcha.
A drone over the top of it to take yeah. pictures.
Are we going
to
have video?
Hmm?
Are we going to have video for him?
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
You never know. Maybe
maybe we will. It'll be movie night. And thank you, Ms. Bach, for your expertise as well. Appreciate that. I'm happy that you were here to opine. Any other roof questions or comments? All right. Last item, handicap parking here at Miami Township. I'm just going to preface, Dawn, with your presentation with the following comments.
We have talked about this. I've lost my voice here. We have talked about this in multiple meetings. I don't want to keep kicking this down the road. This is like we need to have our discussion tonight and figure out what we're doing. So I will stop now.
Okay, while we're moving around, I'll go ahead and start if that's all right, and we'll show
yep.
you pictures. Okay.
Yep.
And I will tell you, I make myself some notes just to make sure that I've got things. But in an effort to do my due diligence to CCPL and the staff, the guests, and you all, I've had to spend many hours thinking about the situation with the parking and how to address it. And I'm recommending that we move forward with the original concept of three parking spots closer to the building. I feel that the original concept is indicated on the picture that we will have in just a minute. Lynn's trying to get this up. And that is the green shaded area, is the three areas that I recommend. I feel that I completely understand that it is a large sum of money to be spent, and I feel that any other concept for other slots would be doing nothing more than putting a Band-Aid on a broken leg. And I am concerned that it could be construed as a waste of funds. Also, as indicated in our most recent survey by UC, handicapped parking accessibility was noted as a concern. Moving forward with the project that I have described will show that we are listening to the guests and trying to address their concerns. And I think that this will give our guests that are coming into this branch a lot closer, our handicapped guests, more accessibility. Granted, it's only three slots, but three slots could mean a lot. I went back and forth on different aspects of it as to what, and that's why I've spent hours trying to think about this, and I felt that I needed to make this presentation just to say that this is what we need to move forward with. I think we're going to get more out of this than we will with anything else, and anything else, I just feel that we would not be doing ourselves or our guests any justice.
So, Don, let's back up a second and just remind the board. We had a proposal for spots around the flagpole.
Yes.
And the three spots. Thank you, Vanna. And the three spots there, which is where our existing green space is to the right of the main entrance, where we currently have a, I believe, storm drain, as well as a sewer lid that will need to be addressed, right?
Yes.
The
sewer lid will not be affected. The storm drain will be raised. And that was all included in the original pricing we got.
Okay. So, originally we were talking about $90-some thousand for the around the flagpole and the three spaces.
Yes.
The three spaces, as you're outlining here, not anything around the flagpole, is
36,450.
And then the other option that we had talked about at the budget committee meeting was, because that little section of those three spots could be converted to two handicap spots just by striping and adding the handicap parking sign, that was going to be around, what, 5 or 6?
6,000.
6,000 for those spots.
And you'd have to do a cutout here.
And we'd have to do a cutout.
Out for the walkway,
right?
With the little red rubber things that seem to fall apart very easily.
Snowplows don't do them injustice.
So we're due to restripe the Miami Township lot anyway, so that's why we're thinking that would be good timing to do that. I want to be really clear that when the budget committee talked about this and brought this to the board, the idea of the two spots. It's never been about the number of places. It's been proximity, because we are well within code,
yes,
for the number of spaces we have today. But those two spaces there that we had proposed at the last meeting for the 6,000,
yep,
are still closer, not by a lot, but yes, still closer than the five up there on the... Is that the north side of the lot?
On your way out.
West? Northwest?
I don't know what.
I have to turn and look at the south station and then turn
this way.
Upper on the chart.
Every time. Anyway, so I just wanted to throw those extra facts in here so that we can make this decision tonight and not keep kicking this down the road.
So to clarify, this is what you are recommending.
This is what I'm recommending, yes. Okay. And I feel that's just for the sake of everybody concerned in getting this thing put to bed, that four or five years down the road, we don't have more concerns about it being a problem.
I think it's great.
So the 6,000 we had talked about, we had said if that's not going to be adequate or it turns out it's not adequate, we could entertain the three. Your argument is, if I don't want to put words in your mouth, but basically that you're feeling like the 6,000 solution is not going to be good, and it's just paying $6,000 for no reason. We're going to end up having to do the 33, and it's going to end up being 39, basically.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Can I ask what changed your mind between the budget committee meeting, last month's meeting on March 17th, and today?
Just my thoughts and thinking about the whole thing. I didn't feel that I did my due diligence to you all or to anyone else in regards to this in the beginning. And I just feel that this is the best solution to our situation.
Okay.
And what did you see? What did you see Claremont have to do with it? Did you mention that, or did I misunderstand what you were saying?
He was mentioning the fact that during the survey, accessibility.
I'm sorry. Say it again. Go.
Accessibility is a big concern of our patrons, our guests.
In the survey, Chris mentioned earlier.
If I could, is this on? Anyway, Judy, I
can't, I'm sorry. I really can't hear anybody. I'm lucky that I heard what Jim had to say. Thank you.
Judy, can you hear me now?
No.
I don't think it's on.
I can yell.
Yell's gooding.
Yeah, but we don't have speaker system doesn't
say. All right, Judy, I went to Chris after the last meeting, and I have mobility issues. This would be better for me because I don't have to go down a ramp and up a ramp because that can cause a problem with me not being stable. So that's, last time I just was concerned that you guys were great in wanting to do this, but you're really, it's the proximity. It's not the number of places. It's how best to get into the library if you have mobility issues.
And just to be clear, it's never been number. No. The two spaces were proximity as well. They were just one.
Except that, Jenny, I have to go down and I have to go up. And that's an issue.
And the two spaces were closer than the far ones, but
correct,
about the same distance as the closer ones.
And if I could point out, we did the same process over, I believe it's these spaces right here.
There's five of them. So
there's right there close. You're
right
in here.
That area. We added, these were added to try and respond to the public's request to have spaces that were closer. And then the walkthrough, we were able to use the existing walkthrough sidewalk to get onto the building. These have never met the public's need. They're still complaining. So this is just on the flip side. It's really not that much difference. And I think when we sat back and looked at it, Teresa said, I couldn't use this branch if that was my only access because this is not going to work for me. And I think that's the problem that we're going to run into is a couple years down the road after we've done this, people are still going to say, I can't, this is the proximity is still too far, and we're going to just redo these. And do we really want to spend the $6,000 on the cutout? It's not this part in repainting. It's the cutout of the cement here just to end up having to come back here and do this down the road. We know based on this survey, you're going to get the survey next month, but based on the survey, they're already talking about accessibility and handicap parking, and this has always been an issue at this branch. Had better design or thought about it better, you know, it went through it went through the building committee of the board too. I'm not going to blame the architect because we signed off on it, but this is going to address, you know, accessibility, and that is, if we're going to be responsive to our community and their concerns, it's an opportunity to do now instead of spend the $6,000 on the curb cut.
I agree. No, I think it makes sense.
I think it makes sense.
How does that impact the fire in front of the building?
It will not.
I called
the fire department already concerning it, okay? They said it will not affect the accessibility for them to get to the building if they need to.
That was my third. So storm drain, sewer,
yes,
lid, and fire link are not impacted. So we're talking about 33,000 change?
No, 36,450. Right.
So it's $30,000. So if we go with this perspective, then you're absolutely right. The $50,000 for Goshen and for Williamsburg's signs will have to wait until we make a determination. And hopefully, we're not going to be in a situation where the analysis of the Bethel roof is going to be more than the $400,000 that was set aside as an estimate.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm just going to throw my two cents in here. I want to balance being good stewards of our taxpayers' money and being fiscally conservative with the needs of our guests and the community. Because if they can't come in, I mean, if they can't act accessibility, they've got to be able to get in the door to be able to use the library, right? So I understand the need. I wish I had a time machine. Because I was not on the board when this design was, and I think I probably would have been like, wait a minute.
Well, I was on the board, and this issue never came up. We totally relied on the architect to make the determination of exactly what happened, and that's what was presented to the building committee, and the building committee
signed off on it.
And they came to all of us to say, proceed. So those issues were never brought about.
I think we looked at the number of spaces, right?
And that I don't know, because I wasn't on the building committee.
Right.
That's what the code calls for. So,
but in my opinion, the five that are over there could be general parking for
where they are.
It's I didn't even know where they were, but I decided to take a roundabout and look at them, and I thought, how ridiculous is that for a handicap over there?
Yeah.
A lot of places are only concerned with the ramp for the wheelchairs, which obviously is a concern, but that doesn't help the others that have canes or have trouble walking.
Yes.
So you're taking care of one need, but you still have another need. That's a problem.
If I looked at the whole picture that may be involved with the guests that are coming in or staff even coming in.
Right. I also think if this has been identified as an issue based on a public survey, it's something that we absolutely need to address before deciding.
Lynn, can we go ahead and turn the mics back on? Because I think we're good.
So what do we need to do to move forward? Do we need to do an official vote?
Let's wait until the mics come back
let's
on.
Well, we already approved the previous plan, so we would need to negate that and move on with the new proposals.
Mr. Humphrey, did you have something? Mr. Humphrey, did you have something you wanted to say? Sorry.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept this plan as a revision to the previous plan for handicap parking.
Okay. Is that sufficient wording for us? And this is the 36,450?
36,450.
I got it. Okay. 36,450 for the three spaces. No impact to the fire lane, no impact to this. Well, the storm drain has to be lifted, but that's part of the cost. And no impact to the sewer. And we're confident that the traffic pattern's not going to be adversely affected either in the front.
It will not be.
Because we want to make sure that everybody's safe with the.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right, Mr. Humphrey made that motion. Do we have a second? Ms. Bach seconds.
Nope.
Ms. Schluter seconds. Guys,
you have to separate this.
I think we need paddles. We just say your name when you do it.
Yeah, we just have to do it.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Present.
All right, Ms. Kasika votes present. Motion passes. It's not the $90,000. It's how much did you save us on our van, Don?
What's that
now? How much did you save us on our van that we had budgeted for? We got a couple thousand there. I mean, it's just, it's.
It certainly wasn't the original plan, but I appreciate the board looking at this issue again. I think a lot of us, especially after seeing that report and having this specific.
Which we haven't seen yet.
All that and you haven't seen.
Yes.
I think it does address those concerns, and this has been an issue ongoing, and I appreciate it very much that you reconsidered.
And if I may, I want to add, Ken, I had to look at the overall picture. As I said, I did a lot of hours of thinking about this and trying to come up with different things, and myself getting to where I'm having some mobility problems myself with my knees, and I just feel that we need to sometimes look at that aspect of it. I know we had an original design that was not proper, but I didn't really come up with changing my mind all of a sudden. I took a lot of time and thought processes in how we should go about this. And this was the best concept that I could come up with. And it's just, I know it seems like it's just a convenience thing, but it's really assisting our mobility challenged guest.
I guess the way I feel about it is at the capital budget meeting where this was brought up and discussed in depth, it would have been a good thing to have had your real opinion as opposed to the one that we were all going along with in order to try to address the needs of it all. But it is what it is.
So here's the thing. I'm going to take offense at what you just said because you're saying that his real opinion wasn't expressed at that meeting.
I didn't say his real opinion.
No, that's what you just said. You said it would have been nice to have his real opinion at that budget committee meeting. And frankly, I feel like we're all using information that we're getting at the time we have it. And Don, you just explained that you've thought about it and thought more on it. And we don't have, the board does not have the results of the survey that you guys do have, which is also probably playing into that decision. We were looking at it. I'm not going to speak for anyone else. I was looking at it from two lenses. One is the budget, because we're facing some significant budget challenges this year with the roof. I was also looking at it as a stepped approach. I appreciate the fact that, hey, if we're going to pay $6,000 for two spaces that aren't going to help our patrons, then 36 for the additional three spaces that obviously will is a decent trade-off. It definitely is a better trade-off than the 90-some thousand for the ones around the flagpole. I have an elderly parent. Used to have two elderly parents that I used to transport to doctor's appointments in their wheelchairs. So I'm very, very much aware of the limitations in our community's parking spaces for those who have mobility issues. So that all was in my head during the last meeting and during the budget committee meeting. So I don't like the way that you worded that.
Well,
that's a real opinion.
I guess what I should have said is, given the fact that we've been talking about this since late last year when we got a single proposal for three or a double proposal for six around the flagpole and whatever, and it was determined we would hold off, and then it was set up for a discussion in the capital budget, and it was discussed in depth to the point where individuals went out and took a look at what are we talking about and the amount of time and effort, and then coming back to present exactly what the consensus, in fact, there was no negation whatsoever from the budget committee itself to proceed and then present it and approve it to move forward, with the exception of the two $50,000 signs,
mm-hmm.
given an issue regarding that. Ready to go, and now here we are an entire month later, and now we're not doing that at all. We're going back to what was one of the proposals in December. So a lot of time and effort,
Judy, I wasn't in the budget committee. I'm on the board of trustees.
Oh, I know.
And so this is the first chance that we've got to discuss it. Was last time and this time. So I think we've come up with a much better solution than was come up with in the budget committee. I think this is actually moving handicap parking closer to our entrance, and that's the important thing that I was trying to do, and have heard from constituents that they need handicap parking closer to the entrance.
I guess in the discussion and when we came to it for any kind of commentary, I guess I missed your commentary about not proceeding or not thinking that we were moving forward with the appropriate response to handicap parking at the Miami Township branch. But it is what it is.
I appreciate the fact that we all have a right to change our minds.
Oh, there's
given additional information, and I think that's, and hey, I'm the one that walked out in the parking lot with Donna and said, why can't we just take these three spots that are existing and restripe them for handicap? We're getting a lot striped anyway. Wouldn't that be a lot less money? Frankly, I thought it was going to be a lot less than $6,000, to be perfectly honest. But, hey, those little handicap signs are expensive.
Well, I think the revamp,
the curb cut. Well, the curb cut, too. So that was my idea in the interest of fiscal responsibility, as well as, hey, these are still closer than the five over there. But if that's not sufficient, then I support doing the extra three for the 36,450. Comments?
Well, we're not also going to do the two, right?
No.
Okay. It was when you said the additional three, and I thought, wait a second.
Well, the three, sorry. Addition to the existing handicap spots, we have two over here, five over there, now we'll have three.
Because that the three that we just agreed on tonight, that curb cut would kind of, that will, the need for that curb cut, that's...
Goes away. But we still have to lift the sewer.
Right.
Not the sewer, but the storm drain.
Right, but it's the, yeah. If we had gone ahead and done the three, the two and the curb cut, and then we determined a couple of years from now, we still have complaints. We're still not addressing this issue. We're going to go ahead and do this three in the front. Then we negated the whole expenditure of that curb cut. And I
that's
think
$6,000.
That's what kind of sat, you know, and then you got the report that said handicapped parking and accessibility, and then, you know, team members and board members saying, wait a minute, we're really not addressing the issue. It just seemed like it was, it's a difficult conversation to have, but it seemed like the appropriate conversation to have in order to do what's best for our library users. So I appreciate everybody's thoughts and comments and relooking at it. I really do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And if we were still talking about $90,000 for the spots around the pole, I'd be having a much different conversation right now. So I think this is a good compromise. So we'll see what happens.
I don't think we can get anything closer to the building. That's it. That's as close as we can get.
Do we need bollards of any kind, Don, to help protect cars from going through the front of the library?
There won't be curbs.
Okay, thank
you. There's going to be curbs on the front of those slots.
Okay, awesome. Sorry, that was something I probably should have asked before. All right, any other questions or comments?
You had added electric signs to number four that you wanted him to talk about.
Well, the electric signs we did talk about, where I mentioned that we had, that was the digital signs were part of the original budget committee recommendation to hold on, and that's the Withamsville and the Goshen branch at $50,000 apiece. So
Williamsburg.
What did I say?
Withamsville.
Really?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm tired and I've had too much caffeine. So
still on hold.
Those are still on hold until I think the recommendation of I think is that those still be on hold until we get better information on the roof for Bethel.
That proposal for those two electric signs has stayed until we can make the determination of the cost.
And if we are pleasantly surprised and we have a magic $100,000 that the Bethel roof costs less,
$700,000,
then we'll talk about the digital signs at those two branches at that point. But for right now, until we know the Bethel roof situation, those are pending. Okay. All good?
Good.
Everybody friends? Everybody's happy? At least everybody's friends? Okay. All right. I have a little bit of levity. I mean, this, again, this is good dialogue. This is what we're here for, to debate and talk and make decisions and disagree and commit. Next meeting is May 19th, 2025. Any additional reminders? The Dolly... Yeah, the movie is, what is it, the 29th?
April 29th.
Got it. Okay.
I'll be on vacation the 2nd through the 11th, back on the 12th.
All right. Awesome.
Andrea will be running the library system. They're very capable.
Yay! All right, everybody. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Mr. Humphrey makes the motion to adjourn, and do I have a second?
Bach, second.
Ms. Pock seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? All right, we are adjourning at 8:08 p.m.